telling you, we had more blood on the court in the last 2 days than we've had in my 5 years here. And that's not going to change. That's not going to change. We might do loose ball drills and charge drills until we have guys out of games because they get hurt. But I'm not going to keep playing with guys that jog and play soft. That's not going to happen.
Frank Martin, after last night's 80-64 win at home against Wyoming, the Gamecocks improving their record, I believe, 7-8-2 right now. 7-2 right now, and Wyoming came into last night's ball game the same 6-2 record. So the result he was looking for, not exactly the execution he's looking for. Chris Silva leading the way for the Gamecocks with 19 points, 10 rebounds, played that game last night with a mask because of a broken nose suffered in practice, in those practices he was talking about there. So Gamecock basketball working through the post-Final Four season right now, doing it by winning a game against Wyoming. That's a lot better than some other big-time teams can say last night. You just heard it in the national update. Number 2, Kansas losing to Washington at home. Number 5, Florida losing their third straight ball game to Loyola Chicago, 65-59, that final score. So some struggles around the country. Vanderbilt also upset last night in the SEC to Middle Tennessee, by Middle Tennessee, I should say, and that one was at home. So that's where we are in early December college basketball. Most of our discussion will be about football this morning. Arkansas has a new head football coach. He's the former Clemson offensive coordinator and Chad Morris. So they're going against the grain. These recent hires in the SEC have a lot of times gone the defensive side of the ball. I guess Florida's hire, certainly not that way with Dan Mullen being a quarterback's guy and their former offensive coordinator. But Jeremy Pruitt is who I'm thinking of here, who Tennessee has reportedly offered their head coaching gig to. He's the defensive coordinator at Alabama, another Nick Saban-like guy, kind of in the same vein as Will Muschamp and Kirby Smart, and the way things have gone defensively in the conference recently. You can throw, I guess, Barry Odom in that same type of vein, the Missouri head coach, former defensive coordinator out there at Missouri. He's not necessarily a Nick Saban guy, but definitely a defensive guy. So it's interesting to see where these teams are going around the country. Scott Frost going from Central Florida over to Nebraska, back to Nebraska, certainly an offensive guy. Willie Taggart going from South Florida to Oregon and now back to Florida State, certainly an offensive guy. Texas A&M going the offensive route. Jimbo Fisher stealing him from Florida State, an offensive guy. Central Florida kind of replaced Scott Frost with Josh Heupel, an offensive guy. He was the offensive coordinator at Missouri. So it's interesting to see where these big-time programs are going. Now, the Gamecocks are charged with getting a new offensive guy after officially letting Kurt Roper go yesterday. What does that mean for Will Muschamp? Certainly, it means that this is a critical hire. Getting the right guy in as an offensive coordinator moving forward off an 8-4 season, 8-4 regular season, and with so many offensive production guys coming back, basically all of them coming back for the next year, in year number 3 of his head coaching tenure, knowing his track record, the failures of offensive coordinators. Basically, you go down the list. First of all is Charlie Weiss, and Kansas got Weiss away from Florida, and that worked out horribly for everyone involved. And then Will Muschamp went out and hired the best guy available that he thought at that point, which was the Boise State offensive coordinator, Brent Peace, an up-and-coming kind of guy. 2 years in, that didn't work out. So he went out and got Kurt Roper, an up-and-coming kind of guy coming out of the David Cutcliffe coaching tree, had a lot of success there at Duke. That now has not worked out. And Will Muschamp had the luxury of saying when he came to South Carolina, if Roper had been the guy the entire time at Florida, that thing would have worked out differently. Well, clearly now 2 years into the South Carolina deal, we know, well, maybe we can't take Muschamp on his word for that, or the results don't match up with that claim.
I think what I wonder about is what he saw in that 1 year at Florida that, but he, I don't know. It didn't work. It didn't statistically seem, there were moments where it seemed to maybe want to start to click. I'm not one of those people that thinks just because of all the injuries that that's the reason that the offensive numbers were what they were. I think it was, again, I do think, going back to Sterling's call at the end of the last hour, that you can't be an absolutist and place it all on one single factor. You can't say, well, it's all on Kurt Roper. And if Kurt Roper had just been better, man, you know, I think Jake Bentley deserves some of the blame. He didn't have his best year. He did miss some open passes. I think there was some missed plays, some missed assignments at times on the offensive line as well. But with all that being said, it just seemed like there was a lack of creativity, a lack of – you go into that Clemson game, you have to do some things differently than what you've done.
So you think the Clemson game could have saved his job?
Yes.
If Carolina maybe doesn't win the ball game, but has it much more of a game like they did 2 years ago, the last time they played right. Clemson at Williams-Brice, where they put up points and they were very competitive. You think that would have changed the outlook to some degree moving forward, right?
You know, and again, and I don't know how to necessarily explain it, but going back to it where just the fact that you have the quarterback run in your bag, it's in your playbook, and you use it effectively against teams like Tennessee and I totally get it. Tennessee and Vanderbilt and Wofford and even Florida are not Georgia and Clemson defensively. I do totally understand that. But why is it used against those teams? And all of a sudden, it's like you see Georgia and Clemson go, nah, we can't run that play at all against them. It's not going to be effective at all because they're mean and they're angry and they might hit Jake Bentley. And
that's the overall complaint that I would think Gamecock fans would have 2 years through Will Muschamp's tenure on offense is that there is no identity.
Right.
At least with Steve Spurrier, you knew the Gamecocks came in, they were going to throw it around, didn't matter who it was. They were going to try to impose their will to a large degree. And then, I guess, in the Marcus Lattimore years, it was not they're going to throw it around. They're going to run the football. Mm-hmm. When the Connor Shaw years, Connor Shaw was going to run the football. And he'd throw it some, too. He'd take some shots down the field. And that's who South Carolina was. Now, there were still a lot of complaints about certain play calls and certain games, for sure. I'm not saying that absolved. That made Spurrier the perfect offensive coordinator. But I think when you're a big boy SEC team, you have to come up with some identity. Like, even Missouri has an identity on offense, right? It was not good early on this season through the Barry Odom era, but now it's gotten Josh Heupel a head coaching job right. at Central Florida because they at least had a plan. Sometimes it worked awfully, but they were going to do it. And I think that might be one of the main detractions, one of the main complaints that a fan can have when you're talking about giving a guy a job for the first time. So that's where Brian McClendon is right now. He's going to call plays, be the guy. I guess you could say he did it in the bowl game for Georgia against Penn State when he was the interim head coach, but I don't know how that exactly works.
Exactly. Yeah.
But he is the acting offensive coordinator for the Gamecocks going into this year's Outback Bowl. And he has the opportunity, at least from the outside it looks like, to take over that role permanently moving forward. Will Muschamp won't make an announcement about that until after the bowl game. But being an offensive coordinator for the first time, like Kurt Roper was in his Florida days, he hadn't gone through it as a play caller at the highest level. He'd seen it happen, but it looked like that he allowed the defenses to dictate what he was doing more than the other way around. Well, and that's never what you want when you're talking about a coach going into a game.
And you know, here's another example. I don't think South Carolina has the greatest speed in the world right now, but Deebo Samuel goes out, and where does the jet sweep go to? I mean, you still do have Dreek Davis and Shai Smith, and instead the only jet sweep you ever see run is with Hayden Hurst, basically. I think Brian Edwards got two or three carries, but it's like that disappeared from the playbook. You lost the little slip screens and South Carolina has big receivers on the outside that can get out there and block, but they kind of went away from those. All of a sudden, they play Wofford. It's like, oh, well, we can run those plays now. I'm with you. I think that's what cost Kurt Roper his job, was there was no identity. You didn't show up on Saturday for any football game and go, here's what we know South Carolina is going to try and do. Some days you'd go, okay, they're going to try and establish the run. But even then, you never felt like there was a couple games where they just threw the ball over the park to start the game, and there was never an effort to go out and establish the run. There was never an effort to go out. Maybe the only time I feel like we ever heard a game plan was the very first one, in which Will Muschamp said, yeah, we were going sideline to sideline basically to try and wear that defensive line out, wear them down.
And had the advantage on the outside. That's where they saw their advantage, and they used it, and they did it really well against NC State. And maybe that's part of the narrative that we had going this year, is that Carolina started pretty well on offense, did it on neutral ground against a pretty good football team, and that was the best game of the year, right, offensively for Carolina? I mean, maybe you argue Missouri? What else you throw in there?
Well, I mean, Florida, they had 469 yards. Bentley just got confused on
28
uniform colors,
turnovers.
Yeah, I mean, Florida conceivably was their best offensive performance. They just kept throwing it at the wrong team occasionally.
This was also a team that gave up more than 42 points in the two prior games and looked like they had given up.
Look, I just said that was their best offensive performance.
I hear you. I'm just saying it's an arguable thing when you're talking about the best one, where it should at least you should have that argument when you're South Carolina every year about really good games where you score more than 28, 31 points, or you could argue less than that because of a kick return touchdown just on offense. Looking forward to hearing your comments. 803-404-6100. We have a Frank's Discount Tire poll question about this subject. Should the Outback Bowl matter in Gamecock football's offensive coordinator search? Right now, you got three options at Tim Hill 107.5 where you can go and vote. You got two no options, and then a good game equals a good offensive coordinator. The no options are no, Brian McClendon is the guy for the Gamecocks moving forward, or no, the Gamecocks need someone new. That is leading the early vote.
Frank, you mentioned on Monday kind of the inconsistency at guard play that you were seeing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Frank played well tonight, well, at least statistically played well tonight. What were your evaluation of those guards? I know Hassani was in and out of the lineup all night.
Yeah, it's still not good. We're not going to fix something that I allowed to go wrong in 2 days. It's going to take time. We're going to fix it.
Frank Martin saying the practices are going to continue to be very physical for a team that he called soft just a couple of days ago after the Gamecocks beat UMass 76-60 was that final score. Last night's final score, 80-64. The Frank that was referenced in the question there, Frank Booker, the starting guard for the Gamecocks. 6-10 shooting last night, including 3-5 from three. He scored 16 points, third leading scorer for Carolina. Felipe Hase, a good game offensively for Carolina. Again, 17 points, 9 rebounds. Martin still not happy with Hase's hustle on loose balls in particular. Chris Silva leads the way for Carolina last night, 19 points, 10 rebounds in that 16-point win at home that improves Carolina to 7-2 on the season. The larger conversation for us, or the bigger picture, I guess, is what Carolina football will do with their offensive coordinator opening. They've made it official yesterday that Kurt Roper is out. Will Muschamp saying that Brian McClendon, the receivers coach, will call the plays in the Outback Bowl, and they'll hire a full-time offensive coordinator, or make that announcement at least after the bowl game. Asking you today, the Frank's Discount Tire poll question, should the Outback Bowl results, or what happens offensively especially, matter in that offensive coordinator search? Right now, most of you say no, the Gamecocks need someone new. Let's get out to the Love Chevrolet phone lines and hear what Frank has to say about the offensive coordinator opening. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, guys. Quick question. Brian McClendon, I think he's an up-and-coming coach, but I guess what I would ask you guys to maybe explain or give your opinion on is what would separate him since he was aligned with Kurt Roper for the position? What's his body of work when he was at Georgia at the end as an offensive coordinator? And then secondly, do you have any names, up-and-coming names, or maybe some established coaches that have offensive background that might be players? And I'll listen to you off the air.
Okay, Frank, the way I see the Brian McClendon situation, I hear what you're saying, that he's associated with Kurt Roper, but he didn't come through the David Cliff coaching tree at all. He was more of a Georgia guy.
Yeah.
He played at Georgia as a receiver back in the day. So he comes from a completely different system. And I would say any of you out there that say that Brian McClendon can't be the offensive coordinator because he would just be like Kurt Roper except less experienced, I don't know if you've ever been in a situation at your job where you don't always agree with your boss, but you're told to do things one way. And then if you were boss, you would do things completely differently. That's the situation I see that Brian McClendon is in. Everything that we've heard, Bill, about the Kurt Roper offensive coordinator arrangement is that he wasn't a collaborator necessarily. He was a guy who was going to call the plays, and that's how he coached. He was kind of his own man in that way. And certainly there are pluses and minuses to that system. If it works out well, you're called a strong leader. If it doesn't work out well, you're called stubborn and bullheaded and a guy who doesn't listen to other people who might have good ideas, right? Clearly it didn't work out well for Kurt Roper in the end. But that doesn't mean that Brian McClendon is going to run everything the exact same way, or that doesn't preclude him from having like a complete different approach moving forward.
It reminds me, I'm trying to think of how Spurrier worded it late in his career, where he basically said he had everybody on the headset and they're all just yelling plays, and he was the guy who go, "Yep, let's run that play." All right, well, like, you know, it was, I think
but
it was
Spurrier
like,
could do that, but
it was like Spurrier, it was like
Spurrier Jr.,
Mangus, and Elliott, and you just feel like there was just, all right. It was like Wall Street, and they're just yelling plays, and they're going, okay, that one. That's the play we're going to – all right, send that one in.
Wall Street, that's good stuff. Someone called up and asked us about Spurrier Jr. being a possible candidate. He's not on the list.
Well, not on our list. We don't know what Muschamp's list is.
He's not on the list.
But what
are some names?
I don't know. I don't think anybody knows.
No one knows.
Rhett Lashley is a name that's been mentioned a little bit.
All we can do is use what we have, the information that we've been given, right?
Yeah.
And then go to, all right, what are some logical connections? Lashley pops up because he worked at Auburn while Will Muschamp was there.
And he's at Connecticut, and you would assume that he would maybe want to come back south. And he's originally from Arkansas.
Get back in big boy college football, right? And Connecticut had a pretty good year on offense. So there is that to point to as well. But we looked it up yesterday. I forget what it was.
And you said
45th? Was that where it was? Somewhere in there?
Between 60-ish? 50 and 60. Yeah.
Okay. As far as total offense.
And they made a big improvement from what the thing that you noticed about that was, I think they were close to 120 in 2016 and then made a pretty significant jump this year. He's a name, Phil Longo, the offensive coordinator at Mississippi, is a name because he was actually working with or for Eric Wolford at Youngstown State. And so there's a connection there that maybe that they're able to utilize and bring him in. Longo, the one-time Sam Houston State coach. And so there, but there's a connection somehow between he and Eric Wolford that could be kind of interesting to see. And then I've just heard some other names that have been thrown out. The Oklahoma State offensive coordinator that you mentioned yesterday, Urich, I believe is how you say his name. I'm not sure how you say his name again.
But that's not a connection thing, right? That's just, hey, one of the best offenses in college football is that guy. Why wouldn't they go after that guy?
And I'm trying to think the guy at NC State again. I don't think that there is necessarily a tie, but I believe it's Eli Dinkowitz, I believe is how you say his name. So there are some names out there. We'll have to wait and see. The question for me is, Will Muschamp has a pretty extensive connection, has connections throughout college football.
Sure.
Do you go outside of your connections to make this, or do you go with somebody like, say, a Lashley that you already know, that you've worked with before? Like, here's the thing, I think that your natural assumption with, say, even a Brian McClendon, a Bobby Bentley, or a Rhett Lashley, that's not three different people, but a McClendon,
but
Bentley.
It's three different people, by the way.
Well, it's.
It'd be weird if they weren't three different people.
It's true. McClendon and Bentley together calling the offense,
mm-hmm.
or Lashley. Muschamp knows what he's getting. Like, he knows exactly what he's getting. He's seen Lashley call an offense or run an offense at Auburn, and he's done it with Will Muschamp as, I believe they were there the same time together 2 years ago at Auburn. He knows exactly what he's getting with Lashley. He should know exactly what he would be getting with a McClendon-Bentley combo, or McClendon being the offensive coordinator taking some, because I would imagine McClendon would be more open to suggestions and working with Bobby Bentley than Kurt Roper was in terms of working with and taking suggestions from McClendon and or Bentley.
Mm-hmm. The difficult part is when you say that co-offensive coordinator type system, I think immediately of Clemson, what they had going with Tony Elliott, the new Frank Broyles Award winner as the top assistant coach in the country, and Jeff Scott. The difference there is that they took over for Chad Morris. They had already been under Chad Morris. They tweaked it maybe a little bit, but Dabo Swinney always said that thing was in the works for years. They were anticipating that was going to happen. It was ready to go. You don't have that at South Carolina because what we're seeing with Kurt Roper, he's not moving on to be a head coach somewhere because he did really well in his position. And the guys under him learned a bunch, and now they're ready to fill in and put their stamp on what's already a well-oiled machine. Yeah. That's not the situation here.
Tony Elliott obviously winning the Broyles Award yesterday or Tuesday. But let's be honest, they were stepping into a situation with Deshaun Watson coming in. That makes you look like a good offensive coordinator as well.
Mm-hmm. Chad Morris getting the credit, by the way, for recruiting.
It's kind of like when Lorenzo Ward had Jadeveon Clowney and Vic Hampton and Kelsey Quarles and all those. Looked like a really good defensive coordinator with those guys.
Back out to the Love Chevrolet phone lines now at 803-404-6100. Bulldog Burt has been waiting very patiently to get in this morning.
Yeah, I was really surprised to hear Kurt Roper got fired. I was wondering if it had to be a game, or did it have to be just a personal conflict? Because South Carolina finished way better than most people predict them to finish, and they go into a better bowl than anybody projected. I just don't see it. And I was really surprised Muschamp, when he was interviewed, had to be lying. He already had to know that. I mean, that's why the question came up. And, but I think Brian McClendon would be an excellent choice because he's the winningest coach in Georgia.
That's a good point. Excellent point.
Remember, he went 1-0 with Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tough to beat that percentage.
He knew he got out when he needed to, didn't stick around.
Now, Bulldog Burt, why do you feel like you have to call into the home of the Gamecocks and just talk about the Gamecocks? Your team just won an SEC championship. I haven't heard any kind of celebration from you, any kind of bragging, and this just doesn't sit
You didn't see Burt's car driving around in Atlanta yesterday?
I did see that. Just showing the SEC championship game on the back. That was good.
Was it my Mercedes?
No, I think it's more of a
it's your other one. It's your weekend car, your yellow
Hyundai.
Hummer. Yeah, your yellow Hummer.
Driving Hummer.
Yeah.
So nothing. Not even going to celebrate or say Kirby Smart's the greatest. Just talking about Roper today, huh?
Yeah, well, y'all was talking about. That's why I was calling in. We know we're greatest, and we know okay. We're probably going to beat Oklahoma and go on and play Clemson in the national championship in Atlanta. And we're looking forward to that win as well. I was really shocked about that and because of the way that South Carolina finished. I think it's really a personal conflict. Like you said, he's calling one play, other people's calling another. I don't know if that's true or that's rumored, but whatever the conflict, I was really surprised. It sort of shocked me because of the way the season was successful. I thought South Carolina had a very successful season from what they were first predicting.
No doubt about it, Bert. No doubt. I think you were watching too many Georgia games, though. South Carolina won this year because the defense was really good. The offense wasn't, man. I don't think it's a personality conflict. This is not personal drama. It's none of that. It's the fact that South Carolina finished 109th, I think, in total offense per game. And they were 114th, I think, in the country and in the year prior, where you give them a bit of a pass. They're new guys, young guys, no production coming back, new quarterback. You had to change in the middle of the year. You get a pass in year number one.
Wow.
You don't get a pass in year number two. And Will Muschamp didn't get hired to go 8-4 in a terrible SEC East. He got hired to get the Gamecocks back to double-digit wins, back to top 10s, to contend for an SEC championship, which they didn't do this year.
And I think some of it is he knows what the expectation for next year is going to be. I don't think people are going to be upset with not winning the East next year, but there's going to be the anticipation that you're going to have to top 8 wins. You got too much coming back next year. And I think he knows that the table is set next year.
Sure.
Look, nobody's going to sit here and say that South Carolina's a national title contender, but I think it's fair to say that maybe next year they open, especially if they win the bowl game, they open the season in the top 25. Would that be a fair expectation?
Absolutely.
That when the polls come out in August, that you kind of expect, especially if they win this bowl game.
No doubt.
With everything coming back.
A 9-4 final record, you were a 9-point underdog basically going into that bowl game. And don't think that Michigan doesn't help playing on New Year's Day
exactly.
And that early spot doesn't help. We saw what could happen with a big play against Michigan in an Outback Bowl and how much exposure that can get. We'll see the hit, I'm sure, 1,000 more times before the Outback Bowl this year. Love it when the Love Chevrolet phone lines get jammed up. That's exactly what we have right now. Some names I didn't even know were still out there looking to get in on the program. Can't wait to hear your opinions about what Gamecock football should now do with an open offensive coordinator position. Kurt Roper officially let go yesterday. The Frank's Discount Tire poll question today: should the Outback Bowl matter in the offensive coordinator search for Carolina? Right now, 60% of you say no, need someone new. 28% of you in second place today are saying a good game against Michigan equals a good offensive coordinator. And 12% of you are just saying no, Brian McClendon is the guy. Let's get out to that Love Chevrolet phone line. Now, Swayze has been waiting most patiently to weigh in this morning. Are you going to go money on us? Is that where you're going, Swayze?
Listen, we got a great staff here. I don't have a problem if Brian McClendon's the best one that can do the job. I know he's a heck of a recruiter and everything. But, guys, we've got to ante the money up on our assistants and everything. That's what Clemson's done over the years. I think they got the second highest payroll, and it's not that we don't have more money. We do have the money. But I want to take care of our assistants and everything in a day where the head coaches are getting a lot of money.
Okay, let me stop you right there, Swayze.
Sure.
So does Will Muschamp. And he knows that's what he has to do to compete in the SEC right now, and especially to compete in the state of South Carolina where Clemson's assistants are getting paid. They were the first ones really around the country to get paid 7 figures, the coordinators.
That's correct, guys. And I just think we just need to up the ante. It's not the money. It's not a money thing. But if we want to go big time, guys, we got to do this. And, guys, I'm one of these I'm tickled that we won 8 games this year, considering the talent level we had. But the other thing on this offense coordinator, we've got to get a quarterback coach, guys, because we're going to be better offense, or should be, next year. But we know that Jake's got to, come back, have a bounce back year from what happened this year, and evidently whatever we was doing in practice wasn't working, because not setting the feet, the things that he was doing, most of the year he did all year. And we've got to get that correct. He's got all the pieces to be a great quarterback, and I hope it's just a sophomore slump or a redshirt freshman slump. But we've got to get that rectified, too, because you can't keep overthrowing wide open receivers, and you can't throw the ball 8 foot over a 6 foot four guy's head.
Thank you, Swayze. That's also part of the criticism for Kurt Roper. Not only was he offensive coordinator, but he's also the quarterback's coach. And you tie both of those in together, you get negative results. You get the eventual result that you got to find someone else to do the job. We're back out to the Love Chevrolet phone lines. James up in Charlotte has been waiting patiently to weigh in on the offensive coordinator position. Good morning, sir. Have I said anything to offend you like usual this morning?
Oh, always, but that list is long but distinguished, Tim. Let's not go through that list.
Okay.
What I would do with BMAC, and it's the point's been made, the thing with BMAC is he's either the best or the second-best recruiter. He or T-Rob are our best recruiters. So that plays into this. To me, the best-case scenario is Brian McClendon, elevate Bobby Bentley to co-OC and quarterback coach. We have a quarterback coach. He's a proven quarterback coach at PC. And obviously, people have a problem with high school coaches, and you got a problem with Chad Morris. You got a problem with Gus Malzahn. Let's give these guys a chance. And the idea that he's going to be biased toward Jake Bentley is bogus. I love the carry-on joiner. He's not going to come in as a true freshman and beat out Bobby Bentley. There will be no real quarterback competition. So if you're thinking there is, get it out of your mind. He's not going to come in and beat a third-year guy like Jake Bentley. He might run a wildcat package next year. I'd like to see Jordan redshirt. So that is a moot point. By the time there's a real quarterback competition on this team, Jake is going to be gone. So Bobby Bentley is quarterback coach and co-OC, BMAC as the primary play caller, and then let's get a new running backs coach, maybe Jay Graham from Florida State. That's what I do, boys.
Okay, James. Jay Graham coming back to South Carolina after leaving, that doesn't seem like it would work out.
Brad Long's. I mean, Brad, I could see Jay Graham. I think Robert Gillespie also may be a potential if they go that path. I do think that's an interesting path.
So that was a vote, one of the few votes in for no, Brian McClendon is the guy no matter what happens in the Outback Bowl. That's what I heard from James.
And here's what I get with James, and I think there are people, and I'm kind of on that bandwagon of if Brian McClendon is capable of doing it. And I don't know. I hate to base it on one game. I don't think you can base it on one game, so it's a very tough decision. I don't think Brian McClendon can be lost right now. I don't know. And I go back to, like, if you, let's say, Chris Lowe put out a tweet last night, and among the tweet says, among some of the names who could be possibilities on Jeremy Pruitt's staff at Tennessee, well, he goes through, and one of them is Lance Thompson, South Carolina. Now, South Carolina, or Lance Thompson at South Carolina, I believe, is either associate or assistant head coach. Mm-hmm. It's associate or assistant, I'm not sure which one it is. But would Brian McClendon be happy being elevated into that title and also getting more money? Or does he feel for him to become a head coach, and that is his goal, that he needs to be an offensive coordinator? Right. That is the next step. Or does he say, okay, look, I like what I'm doing. I don't need the offensive coordinator title. I'll be very happy being the associate or the assistant head coach, and that helps me make the next step to being a head coach somewhere.
I would find that difficult to believe unless he has a prior relationship to whoever's going to be the new offensive coordinator, unless he feels really comfortable about his new boss, basically, on his side of the ball. That would be a pretty large gamble, I would think, if he's really looking to get to move up the career ladder and work towards being a head coach. So, Kyle, we go to now on the Love Chevrolet phone lines. James says Brian McClendon is the guy. Kyle disagrees, and you're looking to get a guy from the West Coast to take over the Gamecock offense. Is that right, Kyle?
Yeah, that's right, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, you know, people forget Muschamp used to coach out in Texas, and those Big 12 teams are fun to watch. And look at when we were in our prime, Spurrier, you know, he aired it out. Why can't we go out there and get somebody? Swayze hit on it. It's all about money. Pay these guys. Iowa State, they're good now. Texas, they're good. Texas Tech's good. Let's go out there and steal one of their coaches. And that's it.
Okay, Kyle, appreciate the heads up, or appreciate the phone call there. I said West Coast. He just meant go West. And Big 12, certainly offensive football is a priority, and they are known for that. You mentioned the Oklahoma State offensive coordinator, Mike Yurchich. Kendall Briles' name has popped up. He was the Baylor guy there under his father, Art Briles, and moved with Lane Kiffin over to Florida Atlantic. He was one of the few Baylor assistant coaches who could get a job in college football after the scandal that caused Art Briles to be fired there. I think he's a relatively popular name amongst some Gamecock fans who don't have a problem with his background there, now translating. But he fits the role, Bill, of a young up-and-coming offensive coach that has had success or been in a very successful Big 12 program where they put up a bunch of points.
I'm just glancing real quick. Not that I think he's the guy in charge, but Eric Marr, he mentioned Texas Tech, and you know he rattled off a couple of schools. Like Eric Marsh is the offensive coordinator at Texas Tech, but we agree that offensive coordinator in name only. It's right. Cliff Kingsbury calling the shots, running the offense, and just in case you were wondering, Eric Morris is a Texas Tech alum making $550,000. I don't think he would be on the list. Look, I think that Phil Longo is a very logical choice, somebody that you could get on board with. And I think Rhett Lashley is somebody. If it's me doing the list, my personal list, it's those two names or it's a combo of McClendon and Bentley.
So the question might end up being for Will Muschamp and Ray Tanner moving forward. They know the price tag to keep guys on the current staff and elevate them.
Right.
So then they go out with a certain price. They go after these two guys, and they say, here's what we can offer you. And number one turns them down, then they go to number two. If number two doesn't go there, then maybe third on their list is the in-staff guy and the in-house guys. It could be a combination of the two, in on the staff or outside in this search.
And I will say, if I'm me, and again, this is – we don't know. We have no clue what Will Muschamp's going to do, so I'm only giving what I would do, my preferences are or would be. If I'm going to do that, I would sit down with McClendon and with Bentley and say, look, Brian McClendon's calling the plays, but I want you to game planning throughout the week to figure this thing out. Kurt Roper did it on his own. And in case people are wondering, if you're saying, well, McClendon's just an extension of Kurt Roper, no. Kurt Roper was his own man in this. It was Kurt Roper and to a lesser extent Will Muschamp. McClendon and Bentley and Pat Washington and anybody else on the offensive side that were not involved, it was Kurt Roper's show. It was Kurt Roper's deal. Brian McClendon could have totally different thoughts and opinions on things he wants to do, and I think you try to marry that with what Bobby Bentley's done. But if it was my list, if it was me, it would be those two guys, Rhett Lashley or Phil Longo, and I would try to land one of those three.
I think a lot of Gamecock fans on the same page with you right now moving forward. The question is, where is Will Muschamp and Ray Tanner in all of this? We'll have no idea until it's done. Maybe we'll get some more information, but I don't expect a ton of information to get out even after the process is done. That's how things work with Will Muschamp moving forward. Let's start with Chuck. You might know him as the Cool Chicken. We haven't heard from him in a long, long time. Everything all right over there, Chuck?
Everything's doing well. Tim, how are you doing, sir?
Doing great, doing great.
This is actually a pretty hard call for me.
Uh-oh.
I wanted to call and gloat. I really did. I wanted to call and gloat about the Roper thing. I mean, I've never been on board with Muschamp, and Roper was one of the main reasons why I was pointing to poor decision-making, you know, doubling down on Roper. But then I was listening to the show, and I started to feel bad about how I've treated you over the years, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. As a matter of fact, you were so fair and balanced about how you were evaluating everything today that I wasn't sure I was on the right place, but then I heard the Freedom Rifle commercial followed by a Jesus commercial, and I was like, yeah, I'm in the right place. But the point I'm trying to make, Tim, is that as I've gotten older, I've tried very hard, and since I moved to the city and got away from, you know, Columbia, I've tried to be more balanced, and the hate that you get whenever you just don't throw the garnet glasses on and double down on what everybody else is saying is insane. So I started to feel bad about the hard time I've given you over the last decade, and I just wanted to say I'm sorry for that, Tim. And you're doing a great job. Bill, I don't have much to say for you, but Tim, you are amazing, and I really appreciate your candor on the air. Thank you so much.
Cool. Chuck, what do you think about John's performance so far?
Great question.
Who's John?
Well done, Chuck.
Excellent.
Dustin, you're up next on the Love Chevrolet phone lines. Good morning, Dustin.
What's up, guys?
So back to the offensive coordinator situation.
All right, guys. All right, first off, before I get too deep into this, I really like McClendon, and I'm going to kind of show you why I like McClendon. He's a great guy, brings in great talent, knows receivers. Obviously, we can't really run the ball, but he does know receivers, and he does. I think he'll do a great job for what we're willing to pay. That's where we're going with this. Okay. Already we've seen just the other day the new details of our head coach's raise, supposedly, which is a joke. We brought him in at 3.1 or something like that, 3.2. Now they're going to pay him 3.4 to 3.6. Okay. He has one more good year. Anybody's going to want to buy that out. SMU will buy that out. The point being, South Carolina's not going to go out there and do what we all hope that they would do, like Clemson would do, and pay a ton of money for our OC. They're just not. We're living in a dream world if we say that. $700,000 is going to be their cap. I can promise you that. It's been like that since I've been a Carolina fan. They're living in the same budget from 07 to 17, and they're still living in the same budget. They don't want to give their fans what they should. Sometimes you got to pay a little to get a little, but they won't. So the truth is, you can go ahead and wipe them big names off the board that we all want. Let's take them out. Now, what does your money get you? Well, you can go out and find an offensive coordinator that was a head coach that's had a lot of problems, a lot of scandals, but at least he's not your head coach. Yeah, you can probably get Brock back in the game, okay? You can probably get Hugh Freeze back in the game. If he's a coordinator, he doesn't have to sit out that year. These guys will be chomping the bits to get something like that, and they're proven. They're not proven with anything else, but they're proven with coaching. Look at Mike Leach, for example. He locked people in the closet. He got back in the game. Nobody remembers that. The point being, we're not going to go out there and pay what Clemson paid.
We hear you, Dustin.
But I think the point is that nobody pays what Clemson pays.
Right? They pay the
like few,
top of the
if
country.
Any. Like Phil Long, he said $700,000. That's what Ole Miss is paying for Phil Longo last year. Contract details, this was out of the Oxford Eagle. Longo's deal was 2 years in length and paid him $600,000 a year. He then got a salary bump to $700,000 a year. Like, if you're paying $700,000 to $750,000, you're paying market price for an offensive coordinator. And who are these big names that are commanding $1 million, $1.5 million? They're probably not leaving anyway, even if you're throwing $1 million out there.
So Dustin is saying that he knows that's not what South Carolina is going to do. Do you agree that it's going to be about $700,000 for the new offensive coordinator, or do you think it will be more?
I think if you can get Phil Longo for $750,000 or $800,000, and I do think that that's more likely, why pay more? You pay me what I'm worth every day, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get paid?
Exactly.
Gamecock football searching for a new offensive coordinator. Paul starts us off in hour number three on the Shepherd's Glass inbox by saying, I think Muschamp needs a proven offensive coordinator. His career is dependent on this hire. This one fails. There'll be no more head coaching opportunities for him.
Would you say Brent Peace was a proven offensive coordinator?
No, I wouldn't. Just a one-year guy, I think, at Boise State.
Was he?
In that offensive coordinator spot. He'd been a long-time staff member, kind of an up-and-coming guy. I believe it's just 1 year where he was officially the offensive coordinator there.
So the guys that I suggest.
But Charlie Weiss certainly was a proven offensive coordinator that didn't work out well in his first year at Florida with Muschamp.
Right. So the guys that I suggest, Lashley and Longo, do they fall into that proven, or because Lashley's at Connecticut, was at Auburn, and a lot of people kind of speculated that Gus Malzahn essentially ran him out of Auburn, basically wanted to make a change. I mean, nobody goes from Auburn to Connecticut.
I think proven offensive coordinators are head coaches only. You don't stay as a proven offensive coordinator for years and years and years, right?
Right.
If you're a really good offensive coordinator. Like, a proven offensive coordinator might be like a guy like Noel Mazzone that was out of Texas A&M. But guess what? His head coach just got fired. He's a pretty proven offensive coordinator that's been through years and years and years of games in the SEC, but I don't think he would be a name that would excite Gamecock fans necessarily. I think really good offensive coordinator hires come typically outside the box. Chad Morris is a really good example. He was proven at Tulsa for how many years? A couple? It's usually hot offensive coordinators that turn out to be good hires as opposed to proven offensive coordinators, because you see through the years in college football, proven guys turn out to be guys that have old ideas and get outdated pretty quickly. I think Urban Meyer and Dan Mullen, those are proven offensive coordinators, right? And we don't know them now as offensive coordinators. We know them as head coaches because they move on and get that next job.
One other name that's at least being mentioned is Dan Werner, who was the offensive coordinator at Mississippi prior to Phil Longo, got let go by Hugh Freeze. If you want proven, and Werner now is an offensive analyst at Alabama, because that's basically what happens. Everybody just goes to Alabama and joins that analyst spot. But if you won't prove it, he was Dan Werner's an older guy as opposed to Lashley and Longo. Werner was offensive coordinator at Miami in the early 2000s, taking over when Butch Davis left, I think, or right around that. He took over in 2001 and was at Miami through 2005. He was also at Ole Miss at the beginning of the Hugh Freeze era and then again left. So I don't know if that's where you want to go. To me, again, there's four people, three groups, three sets that I would look at. Rhett Lashley, and I say that because I think Will Muschamp knows what he's getting in Lashley. And I think Lashley is a good offensive mind. And also, I look at going to Connecticut and taking an offense that last year was in the 110 area and jumping it into the 60s, or I think it was the high 50s this past year.
They worked together at Auburn.
Worked together. They know what they're getting. I think that would be a good fit. I do think Phil Longo, who, again, his experience comes from being the head coach at Sam Houston State on the FCS level and producing an offense that was very, very strong there. Now going to Ole Miss this year, and you saw what he was able to do with that offense. I think he's a very interesting candidate and a guy that I would take a very hard look at.
I would think it would be more difficult to get him than it would be to get a guy away from UConn. Just on the surface, I think that makes a lot of sense, especially since they gave Matt Luke the full-time job, and a lot of that was dependent on their offense this year and their offensive production.
You know, do coaches – here's the question with that. Do coaches view sanctions and everything that's happened at Ole Miss in the same light as players? Does Phil Longo look at it and go, well, we can't go to a bowl for 2 years. I know this is my program. But does he look at it and say, you know what, I can go to an up-and-coming program? Like, I guess the question is, I would assume Longo, his thing is to become a head coach sooner rather than later, to get to an FBS head coach. Does he view going and working with Will Muschamp as another way to – increase his resume, to up his resume, to become more of a head coach? I think that's kind of where it would be very interesting at.
Well, he's in a much safer spot, right? If he produces at Ole Miss, where they have sanctions on them right now, then if he continues to do that, I think you automatically go to that guy and say, man, they keep putting up points. How do they do it at Ole Miss? As opposed to coming, I think offensive coordinators have to look at this opening with a very eyes wide open. Look at what's happened with Will Muschamp as your head coach under the previous offensive coordinators. That hadn't worked out well.
Okay,
that's got to be a tough sell.
But if you come in and you're the guy and you put up points, don't all of a sudden you kind of...
Sure, but you have to know that the odds aren't in your favor. This is not a job under Will Muschamp that has fostered offensive coordinator success.
Let's go back real quick to Muschamp. Do you get the... Because the storyline at Florida was always, man, if he could just get an offense to go with that defense. Are they heading – is this where South Carolina is heading, especially based on this year going 8-4 primarily because of the defense, that once again you're going, if he gets an offense at South Carolina, they will contend for
the
East. Not maybe, but they will. Like, is that where we're at now in Will Muschamp's second year going to this bowl game?
Of course.
Where fans do believe if he gets this offense based on what he's going to do, based on what we saw this year, that South Carolina will at some point be up there next year.
Yeah, did you listen to our preseason shows? It was all about, man, offensive production's coming back. This is a weird year for Will Muschamp. The offense should be much better than the defense. And that didn't happen
at
all.
Okay.
And there's enough information out there, I think. There is enough talent out there to dispel any notions that they don't have the players to do it. It's the coach's fault at this point moving forward. If the offense doesn't work, then you just don't have the right guys to do it.
So to go back then, does Phil Longo or does somebody look at this job? Because I would imagine most coaches are confident in their ability and say, I can go there. I'm the guy that can make this work. Here's why I can make it work. If I go there and I impress people for 2 or 3 years, my resume is greatly enhanced by working with Will Muschamp and showing that I can run an offense with that defense.
Sure, there is that challenge there. Okay. I would think a guy that knows Muschamp personally and has been around him and is comfortable with him would be the right. That's why Lashley is the name that
McClendon or and Bentley. And again, it's got to be a combo deal.
That gets into our Frank's Discount Tire poll question today. Should the Outback Bowl matter in Gamecock football's offensive coordinator search? Right now, 130 votes in, 53% of you going with no, need someone new from the outside. 31% of you in second place say a good game against Michigan on January 1st equals a good offensive coordinator. That's a lot of stock into one game, into one outcome. And 16% of you are saying no, BMAC is the guy. Brian McClendon, the guy who will call the plays for the Gamecocks in that Outback Bowl, you think is already the guy. His status on the staff in this search is certainly an interesting subplot into all this. Knowing his reputation for being a really good recruiter and where he is in his coaching career, Carolina wants to be in the Brian McClendon business, I assume. Now, how much they want to be in it and if they think that is now an offensive coordinator business is going to be very interesting, is what we're going to see here in the next few weeks. Let's go out to California. Billy has been waiting patiently, listening out in California to weigh in on the USC coaching search. Good morning, Billy.
Good morning. Well, here's my opinion. This is Muschamp's job is on the line as far as the coordinator goes. Do you agree?
I agree to a large extent, yes.
if we go back and look, do we really want to go for a coordinator for 1 or 2 years, which I personally say we need, just get somebody into the system who could score points and evaluate himself to a head coaching candidacy, at the same time rebuilding our program into a high-scoring offense, somewhat like Chad Morris did.
Yeah, that would be a good situation, no doubt.
The person who I would look at, Hugh Freeze, or go down to Florida Atlantic and look what Kendall Browse did with no talent at a very small school in 1 year.
Okay, Billy, then the obvious question is, what about the PR scandals that both of those two have been involved with? You're okay with it?
Here's the way I'm looking at it. Hugh Freeze was found pretty much, according to NCAA, he got fired for his hookers, but everything else, he didn't get a hand slapped on. He just got his hand slapped. If you come back as a coach, you got to sit out for a year, or 2 games. If you come back as a coordinator, you're good. So with that, to me, that looks at like NCAA said, we can't prove you did anything. Hardly. With Kendall Browse, using his abilities as a coordinator, he has his daddy is the main problem with that whole system. Get him into an opportunity to get himself together away from Texas. And since he, and him knowing Texas as good as he does, and also having Muschamp with experience in Texas, wouldn't that be a good fit? I know he wasn't at University of Texas, but
well, the problem there is that not just from Briles being attached to the Baylor scandal off the field, but Lane Kiffin was at Florida Atlantic this year, too.
Right.
And Lane Kiffin is known as a tremendous offensive mind. So how much credit do you give Kendall Briles in that offensive system where Florida Atlantic was tremendous this year? I'm sure he had a role, but how much credit do you give him there? And outside of that, I guess if you were trying to say that the Gamecocks are going to develop some kind of Texas recruiting pipeline, that ain't going to happen. Especially with the guys that are now in Texas and Jimbo Fisher and Tom Herman.
Well,
they ain't letting that
and Muschamp's been very clear that the footprint of the area, and then going into South Florida a little bit.
Down to Jacksonville or ish.
Yeah.
That's what the Gamecocks will target. So that's not a thing. You don't think these are either one are candidates because of the off the field, the PR?
I don't think so at all.
Issue that.
Not at all.
Okay. Let's move on to the Love Chevrolet phone lines. Several more of you waiting very patiently. David up next on the program. Hello, David.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, you?
Good. I don't have an opinion either way between hiring an experienced coordinator and paying them a lot more money than a running backs coach, McClendon?
Wide receivers coach?
Wide receiver, excuse me. But when Muschamp and Ray Tanner and what they present to the Board of Trustees to pay, what they're looking at is the risk. I'd lean towards hiring some people maybe you've been mentioning, maybe some even some better names, because as far as risk goes, if for some reason after 2 or 3 years things continue as such as not beating Kentucky regularly, getting blown out by Clemson every year, especially at home when you actually were ranked, regardless of what people think of that, versus then you're going to be able to hold that particular offensive coordinator accountable. But if you bring somebody up like Brian McClendon, who I'm sure he's a great recruiter, being a great recruiter doesn't translate into what can he do as far as X's and O's. If you put in Muschamp's guy, McClendon, and he does things continue the way they are against Kentucky, against Clemson, then after no matter how well you do, if you happen to go 9-3, 8-4, but you're still not getting over that hump, then you got Muschamp with, 4 or 5 years under his belt now, no progress. And then not only are we looking to replace an offensive coordinator again, we're looking to replace Will Muschamp now. So they have to evaluate the risk. So I would go with getting somebody in there like Clemson did. Now, Will Muschamp is a proven head coach and a proven top assistant coach at several different top programs. Dabo Swinney hadn't proven himself until really last year. The year before was, you know, they got to the championship. It was ACC. But last year, he really proved himself. This year, they proved himself. But before that, they were able to get Brent Venables. They were able to get these top offensive coordinators that pay him top money. And Dabo Swinney wasn't really a household name or like he is now. Will Muschamp's got a proven name. I think they should pay the money and go after somebody that's has a lot of significant experience and comes from winning programs.
Thank you, David. Appreciate the phone call. I hear what you're saying there, and I think that might be what the takeaway I get from there is that a big-time name is necessary to move the Gamecocks to the next level. I get that, but it doesn't necessarily equate. It's not always a 1+1=2 equation here because Will Muschamp has done that. He's gone out and gotten big names before. He had Charlie Weiss attached to him in year number one at Florida, and the offense still wasn't very good. And then he went out and got a Boise State guy, a national name at that point, kind of the hot up-and-comer. The Kurt Roper situation obviously didn't work out. I don't think you can just say if you throw enough money at it, it's obviously going to work because look what Clemson did. It worked out for Clemson, and that's how it worked out, but it doesn't work out like that every single time. Ask Texas A&M. They've thrown a bunch of money at their football program recently and haven't gotten championship results. Ask Texas. You can kind of go down the line there.
But, Mike, I guess here's my question. When people say, well, go get a big name, go get a big name, go get a – who? Like, who's the big name? Like, I get that, but who's the big name? Like, I think it's so
I don't think it matters to a lot of Gamecock fans out there who the specific name is as long as – Will Muschamp and the football experts at South Carolina sign off on it. They just want to see the aggression, the money, the investment thrown out there. They want to see that move as opposed to what would be perceived, I think, as a bargain basement guy trying to work his way into it. You understand that, right? I understand. I get that completely.
So just pay $1 million. I'm not being sarcastic, but pay $1 million. Doesn't matter who you get. Just pay $1 million and say, hey, look, we paid $1 million to get this guy.
It obviously matters. And then that comes along with it. Like, this guy comes in with the reputation. He's already making $1 million. We're going to be better on offense. I get that approach from Gamecock fans. You don't?
I guess I do because that's my question. Like, everybody's saying, well, go get a big name. Who? Who is the big name? Like,
so do you think this is a Tennessee coaching search?
Let's compare the previous two calls. Guy calls in. It say what it is. Let's just use the names. He said Kendall Briles.
Mm-hmm.
Is Kendall Briles a big name?
Pretty big. His last name was different, it might be different.
I think his name's a big name because of what he did at Baylor off the field, not because of
what Art Briles did at Baylor offensively, and he's part of that. He was his offensive coordinator. That's a large part of it. You got to agree. You disagree? I mean, that was Baylor, man. Do you remember Baylor football before Art Briles?
If it was Art Briles' name, yes. Kendall Briles, I feel like Kendall's getting some of the backlash of. But I guess my point is, so when people say, like, is Phil Longo a big name? Is Rhett Lashley a big? But if you pay him $1 million, is that all of a sudden a big name? Because he gets $1 million,
they become
a big
Chad name? Morris-esque, right? Chad Morris wasn't a big name at the time of the hire from national football. I mean, he was Tulsa's offensive coordinator.
Let me give you an example. Travaris Robinson is about to make close to, if not more, likely more. They're going to redo the contracts. I don't know when this is going to come out. Travaris Robinson's going to probably be making more than $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make him a big name now nationally? He will now be one of the top paid defensive coordinators. I expect Travaris Robinson to be, if not at $1 million, just over $1 million when they get these new contracts. By the way, I expect Brian McClendon to be close to $750,000 mm-hmm. when these new contracts come out without being the offensive coordinator. That's something else you got to think about. I mean, they're going to do everything they can, whether it involves or does not involve the offensive coordinator position, to keep Brian McClendon. And that means him getting a significant raise, maybe a different title. Don't be surprised in that. So when you say throw money at these guys, I guess my question is certainly, let's say Phil Longo is a name. That's one of the names we keep harping on this morning, or I keep harping on Longo and Rhett Lashley, and then again McClendon and or Bentley in some combination role. But Longo makes $700,000. You have to give him at least $750,000, $800,000 to convince him to come, right? You got to bump his pay up. So does that instantly make him a big name because you bumped his pay up and gave him? I think that's my question when people call and say, well, just go show you care. You got to hire the biggest name out there. You got to go hire the big – well, who? Who is the big name? If you go get Jed Fish, I believe he's now unemployed. I don't think he got retained out at UCLA. He was the guy who was in the running for the head coaching job. Might have gotten it had they not gotten Chip Kelly. Or UCLA not brought Chip Kelly in. Is that a big name? Noel Mazzone? Is that somebody you want? That technically is a huge name, right? done a lot of work, been around for a long time. Dan Werner, the guy, the offensive analyst at Alabama, if you look at his resume, technically he's a big name, and you don't have to pay him that much. So because you didn't pay him that much, all of a sudden is it a lesser name?
I think Gamecock fans want to see the investment there because they've seen it work on the other side of the rivalry fence for Clemson, and they feel like if they don't do it that way, then Clemson is one-upping them.
Am I just wrong on this? The difference is
that not every program has to do it in the same way their rival has done it, and it doesn't work out all the times, even if you do put that huge investment into a hire.
But am I wrong on that? Do I feel like there's a disconnect right now that just South Carolina, if they throw money at any offensive coordinator?
That will satisfy a large sect of the fan base.
If me and Ted, co-offensive coordinators this year, if we were to get a lot of money, does that just...
No.
Is it just about the money? Like you said, you just want to see the financial...
It's about competing in the marketplace at the highest level.
Okay. So it's not so much the name, it's the money that's thrown.
It's the market value of a guy. And if you put that value on a guy, that means he's going to be really good. Now, the results don't always follow the money, but I understand that mindset.
Telling you, we had more blood on the court in the last 2 days than we've had in my 5 years here, and that's not going to change. We might do loose ball drills and charge drills until we have guys out of games because they get hurt, but I'm not going to keep playing with guys that jog and play soft. That's not going to happen.
Frank Martin, after last night's 80-64 win at home against Wyoming, Gamecocks improved to 7-2. Wyoming came into that ball game with the same 6-2 record. Chris Silva led the way for Carolina, 19 points, 10 rebounds. Also had to play with a mask on his face because of a broken nose. I put the dots together there and figure out that might have happened in practice.
You're a true detective.
That would not be the first time injuries have resulted as a product of very physical practices. It sounds like that's going to be the norm now for this Gamecock team, where they're clearly working through some issues. Coastal Carolina up next for Carolina on Saturday at the Colonial Life Arena. We get back out to the Love Chevrolet phone lines, 803-404-6100, talking about the Gamecocks offensive coordinator search. Thomas has been waiting very patiently to weigh in this morning. Hello, Thomas.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well.
All right. Yes. This guy, wide receiver coach, that we're going to have in this offensive coordinator for the Outback Bowl, I really think that he should get that spot regardless of what happened. You know, this guy is, if you look at his wide receivers and stuff, yes, he recruit well or whatever, but those guys got some of the best in the country for his drop rate. So this guy is evidently a coach. Now, I like to see Bobby Bentley move up to a quarterback coach. Now, when we talk about Bentley does need some development. You know, the overthrowing receiver, wide open receiver, he's missing him. When you think about his development, you have to go back and look at McElwain as well, because if Roby wasn't developing Bentley, it's obvious that he wouldn't develop McElwain. And now, you know, we might have let a great quarterback get away. But this new quarterback that's coming in, should Baby come in and compete? I disagree with the other caller a few calls ago saying that this guy won't Baby come compete. This guy has the ability to come in and compete. This, hopefully, when he comes in, they just don't have him run design quarterback run when you got an athletic quarterback. Defense is going to automatically know that. Will you allow this guy to run the same plays that Jake run, but with the ability to, hey, if it's not there, make it happen. You know, and like I said, this guy that originally was a interim coach at Georgia years back and stuff, this guy has the ability, and we need to think outside the box, and that's what's been killing us, because we think we go out and get these proven, and like y'all said before, these proven guys, they don't stay long as offensive coordinator anyway. They're already head coaches, so guys that we're going out to get is going to be guys that, firstly, you know, maybe 1 year here, 1 year there, but if them guys making $700, they're not going to come all the way across the country to South Carolina for $750. So guess what? Now you're going to have to bump the pay up, which no one wants to do. And my last point, you need to let Muschamp pick his own offensive coordinator. If he want to go with McClellan, that's good. Because if you start on the line, I heard a caller say, need to let those guys on the board and stuff like that pick his offensive coordinator. If they fail and Muschamp didn't pick him, there's no blame. There's nothing on Muschamp. You know, if he's going to risk his neck, if I was the one that's going to get fired based on the performance of my team, I want to pick every moving piece on my team, period.
All right, guys. Y'all have a great day.
Thank you, Thomas. Was that Andrew McCutcheon he mentioned? Brian McClendon?
No.
Todd Wynn, and via the Shepherd's Glass inboxes, Gamecock fans want to see a person hired that has a proven track record of running an offense that Will Muschamp described when he took the job. We were told one thing, but got the opposite. Ken says, what we need is someone with a proven record of innovation, someone who invents, not someone who just runs someone else's offense. Back out to the Love Chevrolet phone lines. Jay up next. Good morning, Jay.
Hey, guys. Bill, you sound like that old guy that tips $5 on an $80 tab. You're not having to pay for this offense coordinator out your own pocket, man. Come on.
Here's my thing. Like, I don't think that just saying, hey, let's pay $1 million to anybody fits the role of, all right, you made a great hire. Like, you can throw a lot of money at somebody. I guess my point is, it's kind of like with the baseball coach. I think everybody wanted Ray Tanner to go out and throw $1 million at somebody and make this big grand hire. And I'm trying to – Brian O'Connor and Kevin O'Sullivan, and I forget the coach at TCU's name all of a sudden.
Snosh-Nagel.
Like, it was like, all right, just go throw money at them. And just because you give them $1 million, it's a great hire. I totally agree. Look, I'm not saying that – I guess my point is you pay the marketplace value. Phil Longo, I'm using his as an example because I know his contract, $700,000. To get him, you have to pay, I'm guessing, a minimum of $750,000, $800,000. Does that satisfy everybody's needs? Does that make everybody happy if they pay $800,000 to get Phil Longo and then we go, okay, we made the greatest hire possible? Or if Rhett Lashley, I'm guessing, again, I'll try and look it up here in a minute, see if I can get Rhett Lashley's contract. My guess at Connecticut, he's not making more than $250,000, right? I mean, that would be an assumption, right? If you pay Rhett Lashley, who I think is a really, really good offensive coordinator and could be a good fit, if you pay him $500,000, does that mean it was a bad hire?
Let me tell you what I'm looking for. I don't have a name, but I do have some qualities. And I'm not going to go back but a couple of games. When it's 3rd and 8 and we're throwing swing passes out the backfield trying to pick up a first down, or it's 3rd and 2, we're throwing 45-yard pass plays and we could turn around and punt, or when we have games where Bentley – has the ability to run and where he's scoring 2 touchdowns in a game, and then in the Clemson game, there's no design runs. He's 8 for 15 in the first half with an average pass play of 2.5 yards. I mean, there's no reason we should have looked as bad as we did against Clemson. So you can blame the offensive coordinator, but you got to also say Jake Bentley has regressed greatly this past year. I don't know if it was because of the play calls, but if he is going to be deemed a drop back passer, he's got to learn how to pass the ball. We're not, I don't even know what his ending, I know his completion percentage might have been 65-67%. When your average pass play is about 2.5 yards per play, of course it's going to be high. But we need to go back to the drawing board. I'm all for going with from within. I think we got talent on his team, coaches, to Bobby Bentley. You know, how can Jake Bentley not be a good quarterback when his dad's sitting right there? I would promote from within. That's what I would do.
Thank you, Jay. Darren weighing in via the Shepherd's Glass inbox says, thinking this Clemson game was a blessing in disguise. If we didn't get shut out for most of the game, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation right now. It's an interesting thought there. You looked up some details on Lashley's contract.
Rhett Lashley making, and then a couple people tweet at me, $350,000 for 3 years. Interesting, he left. He was not let go technically by Auburn. He was not technically fired. He left Auburn where he was making $600,000 annually to take a $250,000 pay cut to go to Connecticut to work with Randy Edsall.
Right, so you can connect those dots.
I'm reading this off of AL.com. It does point out, I'm going to read you part of this. It says, after inheriting play-calling responsibilities from Gus Malzahn, as mentor and former high school coach, Lashley helped lead Auburn to an offensive resurgence by bringing back the run-first identity that had been a staple during the 2013 SEC championship season. It goes on to say, after a 1-2 start with erratic quarterback play, Auburn won 6 straight with Lashley calling plays before losing 2 of its final 3 regular season games to rivals Georgia and Alabama, which the Tigers scored 6 and 12 points respectively, as well as a 35-19 loss to Oklahoma in the Sugar Bowl. Lashley also called plays against Texas A&M in 2015, a victory that ensured the Tigers would be bowl eligible. It goes on to talk about also how his last year at Auburn, Auburn led the SEC and was sixth nationally in rushing, 271 yards per game just a year after the strength of the offense, was fifth in the conference and 35th nationally and the worst year ever. He's obviously a run-first guy. $350,000, and I guess this is my point. I think I don't know if Rhett Lashley's the guy. I don't know if he is should be the top guy. But my point is $350,000, if you pay him $500,000, do fans go, man, that's a bad hire. Yes. We're not giving
him a
They're
not going to be happy with it. Much like I think a lot of people are underwhelmed by the baseball hire because they didn't go out and get a big-time name. But ultimately, it doesn't matter what the initial reaction is, right? Just like it didn't matter the initial reaction to Will Muschamp. I think Gamecock fans would have signed up for the question mark hire that got them to 8-4 at the end of 2017 season, right? So it has worked out to that degree. And the next person, no matter... The expectations will be a little bit higher if they go out and get a name outside the staff and they pay them $1 million. They will be higher, the expectations on offense. But the expectations are going to be high no matter what.
Right.
And it's going to come down to production. Kyle, up next on the Love Chevrolet phone lines this morning. Hello, Kyle.
Hey, guys. Listen, we have two spots open on this staff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I know McClendon and everybody's worried about him leaving, but I think you can do, like you said, Bill, you don't have to make him your offensive coordinator. He's only called one game in his career, and that was Georgia's bowl game a couple years ago. But there's a couple guys that I think we need to do our homework on that are not far from us, and they're at Appalachian State. And one's a run game coordinator. They're both co-offensive coordinators. The other's the passing game coordinator. And they've had some pretty good success the last couple years, and I think they've won the Sun Belt the last 2 years. And I think they had a rushing attack that led the Sun Belt with over 250 yards. So that's my opinion. I would look at somebody like that, maybe bringing two guys that could run your offense outside of McClendon and Bentley.
Yeah, that ain't happening. Thank you, Kyle. You're not bringing in a pair of guys to run an offense.
And what he means by that, there is the NCAA has approved the 10th spot, but that doesn't open until January 30th. So you essentially would be hiring one guy.
Well, you could do it.
You could technically.
That would be the most outside the box move that we could ever think of, because you have two guys who are very qualified to be co-offensive coordinators right now, and Bobby Bentley and Brian McClendon. What kind of chemistry would you have on your staff if you bring in two other guys to start running the show over the guys you already had in there?
Woods Gardner tweets in, I see what you think about this. He says, you cannot move Bobby Bentley to the quarterback coaching job or offensive coordinator in any role based on the current QB progression. No way can you not open up the quarterback job in the spring. And then he says, quit fueling that dead end. He's a position coach that doesn't relate to his son, period.
What?
I basically saying that if Bentley took the job. One, what I think Woods is saying in this tweet, A, is there needs to be an open quarterback job. You need to have, I guess, Jay Urich and DeCarrion Joyner and fighting for that job. It needs to be an open quarterback job.
No one's handing Jake Bentley anything. Okay, if he goes out and is awful in spring practice and is terrible in preseason practice, then he won't be the quarterback. The odds of that happening, though, are next to zero based on what we've seen so far, right? There's a reason why he got basically all of the snaps this year.
Right.
It ain't because his dad's on the staff. That's ridiculous. Will Muschamp gets paid way too much money to play favorites, and it makes zero sense. That's a Little League way of thinking of this thing. Where are you going with next? I thought you were going with a whole diatribe here of what explaining what he was
trying
to say.
And then what I was going to say is moving. So that's the quarterback battle part of it.
Right.
Whether or not, doesn't matter who the offensive coordinator is and or who is, but whether or not you're opening up the quarterback competition in the spring. The next part is moving Bobby. See, I think one move that needs to be made regardless of who the offensive coordinator is. I think there's a common. It happens the majority of the time. The offensive coordinator is the quarterback coach.
Right.
That doesn't necessarily have to be that way, but I do think Bobby Bentley, you go back and he has a history of producing good results with quarterbacks. I'm not sure whether or not the offensive coordinator has to be the quarterback's coach.
Mm-hmm.
Like Brian McClendon, if McClendon gets the job, he's going to still be the wide receiver's coach. He's not naturally just going to move into the quarterback's coach. That's not his forte. I think Bobby Bentley is actually better served as the quarterback coach than he is at the running back coach.
No, it depends on who they might bring in from the outside and their history coaching quarterbacks as well. Plenty more opinions about the offensive coordinator search for Gamecock football, 803-404-6100. Andre knows that number. He's up next. Go ahead, Andre.
Congratulations, guys, on locking up the phone lines this morning.
Thanks, man.
But one of the things I would say is that just to add, you know, my eggs to the basket that are unhatched is, I would just go ahead and promote McClendon and Bentley to co-offensive coordinators. and possibly find out what it takes to get Jay Graham back in the fold as well, too. Do you guys know what it would probably take to get Jay Graham back? And who would you put up in the press box if McClendon and Bentley are labeled as co-offensive coordinators? Thank you for the call, guys.
Appreciate it. I would think you would I don't know. It just depends on how you work out that situation and whoever's really calling the plays you put up in the press box, right?
See, I like the this is just me. I kind of like the offensive coordinator being on the field to talk with the offense as the game's going. Now, maybe that's just because I watched Spurrier. He was really the offensive coordinator for so long and being there. And I just think it's better. Now, it also depends. See, that was one thing. Like, if Kurt Roper is the quarterback's coach, when Bentley would come off the field, me personally would prefer he be there to instruct Bentley one-on-one instead of passing the message or going through the headphones.
He went directly to the headset most of the time.
So I still, that's me. It's I don't know if that matters at all or not, but I would prefer my offensive coordinator to be on the field just to be there to communicate with the offense when they come off and talk.
To me, I like the press box approach. There's a reason why that's the common approach in football, I think. You get the better view. You can take some emotion out of it, and you can formulate more of a of an approach, a larger picture approach without any kind of distractions, with all the information that you need, and I think that's why it's done that way. Rod, up next on the offensive coordinator search for the Gamecocks. Hello, Rod.
Man, got a quick question for y'all, and I'm going to let you go. If you promote Brian to the OD, what will be our identity? Because we didn't have an identity this year on offense, so that would be my only question. Because I don't know anything about this guy. I mean, I know y'all know him. I know he coached wide receivers. But what will be our identity? Thank you.
I'm sure that would be his first order of business at his introductory press conference to explain exactly where they were going to go. I would assume, being a wide receivers coach, it would be a spread type attack where you get the ball on the outside, you take some deep shots, and you go from there. But Kurt Roper had an idea of what he wanted the identity to be of the team. It just never happened. So putting the philosophy and the theory out there of your identity is one thing. Actually being able to do it and impose your will on other teams, that's a completely different deal. And the problem, I think, would be for a lot of Gamecock fans is, well, you were already on the staff of an offense that didn't really thrive. What makes us believe that you can be the guy to take it to the next level?
Well, and that's where I think everybody is so interested to see how it plays out against Michigan and what kind of identity Brian McClendon goes out and tries to have. And he's going to, the word is, and Will Muschamp echoed this on Sunday night, he should have healthy guys. Deebo Samuel's not expected to play, but Rico Dowdle will be back. Casey Crosby will be back. You should have pretty much every offensive weapon. So how do you go back? How do you go about utilizing those guys? And now you've seen some improvements. You're going to add Dowdle along with Turner, who showed he could carry the load. And Tyson Williams was kind of stepping up. Then Brian McClendon is going to enter that game with almost a full bank of playmakers. What kind of identity does he go out and try to establish early on against that Michigan defense? I'll say this. He gets a great test. If you go out and put up 24, 28 points against Michigan, against that defense, hard to not make a very strong case for Brian McClendon.
That's why we asked the poll question today. The Frank's Discount Tire poll question, should the Outback Bowl matter in their offensive coordinator search for the Gamecocks? 56% of 215 votes say no. You need someone new. Second place was a good game equals a good offensive coordinator with 30% of the vote. Just 14% of you are saying no. Brian McClendon is the guy for the Gamecocks moving forward.